Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 94-year-old Lou Boria. He lives in Florida now, but grew up in Brooklyn. Boot camp in Parris Island, South Carolina, as a 16-year-old who had fudged his age to get the draft board's attention, proved to be quite unforgettable.
This drill instructor, he comes with a lineup. Anybody that was in the Marine Corps at that time, a draftee, his serial number started with a 9-0. So he's looking, he goes, and he sees me. You a draftee? You couldn't volunteer? You come into my Marine Corps? You effing this and that draft, I did this and that. I mean, this guy was with his finger, and he would never physical. I mean, but just jab you like this and stick his finger. This was from that day on. He was, because I was a draftee, I wasn't a volunteer. But, I mean, not that only me. I mean, he was tough on him. Anybody that went to the Marine Corps could tell you that. Boot camp, I mean, he was tough. There were many a time that I was, oh, what a mistake. But these guys were unbelievable. I mean, they were so close to me. One of the funniest things, one of the toughest things. I said, you know, you grow up at home. In Brooklyn, you had apartment houses. And in between the hall, the apartments were this way in the hallway, right? At the end of the hallway, it was a bathroom. So when you used the bathroom, you put the latch on to the door from the other apartment. And when you got out, it would put the, then they would come in, they would put a light, you know, so that it was one bathroom for all this. So everybody had a party. So everybody had a little room in to go to when you had to go. So now you imagine you get to Parris Island and you get in the barracks and you go to the bathroom. And there's four bowls across this way, and there's four bowls this way. How do you sit down and pull your pants and sit down and do this? And you're looking at a guy. I mean, it was. I don't think I was constipated for about a week and a half. I just couldn't go. I mean, you said that kind of thing. Yeah. And that, you think that's bad? Try going to the shower. Uh-huh. It is the same routine, five showers on that side and this side. Yeah. So it's funny, and it's tough, you know, to get over that. But anyway, boot camp was 12 weeks. I mean, these guys pounded on you. So there were times that I was really, 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 you know, at the end. But these guys were coming, especially this guy from West Virginia. You know, he would be all over me, you know. And the guys, everybody, I don't think there was, none of these guys ever knew what a Puerto Rican was. I mean, they were all from Oklahoma, places like that. They weren't, no city guys. So anyway, in the Marine Corps, before you graduate, we have a parade, you know, and it's the first time you're getting into full dress uniform. And we had a sergeant, and like I said, that guy, he says, the color in here is marine green. I don't want to hear anything about this, you know. And they would be looking at me and telling all these guys, you know, but it wasn't needed. I mean, those guys, they were the best. The best.
I think what I hear you saying is that the first time in your life where you didn't feel discrimination was in the Marine Corps.
And the thing was, you know, in my time, the only guys that you could go to, men, were the church members. I couldn't come and tell them about what happened in the streets, you know what I mean? You had to mostly all the time find a solution by yourself. But anyway, getting back to, so you get your full dress uniform, and I'm telling you, these guys, when they put that, they have guys to measure your, when you put that on, that thing fits perfect. So that they have the parade, and once we pass the review, you get back, your bags are packed, everything is, and you get 10-day leave. So we went for the parade, when we get back, and all these guys were all hugging each other, and you know, that we made it, you know, and they're all so happy, and I said, Boria! Everybody freezes, you know. All the guys are looking at me like, they're not going to let this guy graduate. And so anyway, I run outside. I'm standing outside. So he walks over to me, and he sticks his hand out. He shook my hand. Well, anyway, he shakes my hand, and he tells me, you're going to be a good Marine. He said, but learn kind of control your temper. So I run back inside the barracks, and I come in, and the tears run down my face. I was so excited. And the guys thought that the guy had. So they come running over to me like, you know, like, what happened? He shook my hand. They flipped out, everybody jumping and screaming and carried on. And that was like the big introduction to me with the Marine Corps. I mean, it was like the best thing I ever did in my life. You know, you go overseas, and yeah, that was the big turning point in my life, when that guy told me. It made me feel like I was something. I was a man. You're a Marine. You know what I mean? And what a great feeling that was for me. I think I came home for boot camp. I think it was May. I was out on my way overseas. And we went through the Panama Canal to Hawaii and did all my training. And we went aboard a ship. It said 53 consecutive days on a troop ship. I don't even, if you ever have any idea what it's like. I mean, you're getting two meals a day, no fresh water showers. You know, so where do you go? A couple of hundred guys on a ship. Where could you go? And in those days, they had no air conditioning. They had these big funnels on the ships on the front, and which the ship was facing where the wind was. You got some breeze down below, but if you didn't, forget about it. I mean, and then you're stacked up five and six high. I mean, it's horrible, really horrible. We hit a monsoon. I mean, the chains on the bunks snapped. Guys come down broken arms. I mean, busted heads, and it was really blood all over the place. It was really tough times. I come up out of the mess, down. You had to go across the deck to get to the mess hall. So I'm standing, I'm coming up, and this officer's standing, and he holds me back. And as I had to help out, the ship, the blades were spinning out of the water. The ship was tinted like this, and the ship was vibrating. So he's holding me back. All of a sudden, this mountain, I mean, I look out, there must have been 30, 40 feet high, just over the top of the ship. All the landing crafts that were on that one side of the tore them right off. So it was like a domino effect. This one hit this one, and the next thing you know, we're all gone. So now we're all saying, well, we're going to go to make the beach, and they got no boats. They sent boats from other ships. To make these invasions, they throw these nets over the side of the ship. And they bring these boats up alongside. Now, you know, you're out in the ocean, the waves. And so with this, boats are flat-bottom boats. So they're bouncing up and down. So you're coming off the net. You got a pack, rifle, ammunition, everything. Now, you're coming down. All of a sudden, you go to put your foot, and there's no ship. The boat is down. So you got it dangling there. And at that time, well, I was only a private, but later on, it was different. But anyway, usually the sergeants always go over first, and they get down, and they grab the net, and they hold it as taut as they can. But at the end of the time, their legs are flying in the air, and the boat's gone. So you're holding these guys, hold on, however, so that if they hear you with all the constant pounding and everything that's going on, you'd think that the world has gone crazy. So anyway, finally, you get a chance to get, and you drop into the boat. So when you drop, you buckle with all that weight, you know, and now you're waiting for the next guy. So you got to keep your helmets. The guys are, but anyway, you finally get the boat loaded up, and it pulls off. Now they go into what they call a rendezvous area. So whatever wave you're going to be in, depending on what's happening on the beach, if it's tough, they keep you out there. So anyway, they might have seven or eight boats. You ever go to the airport and smell a diesel? Imagine eight boats, one right behind the other. So the next thing you know, everybody's puking. I mean, out on the floor, sick as a dog. And you look around, there ain't nobody standing there. All these guys are all laying out, they're all back and forth in all the puke. Every time that ship goes down, that stream of water back, just soaking wet, puking all over yourself. They finally get the boat. They say, okay, they head in for the beach. You might have been in that rendezvous 45 minutes, an hour. You don't know. You lose time. Anyway, you get to the beach. It says, okay, get ready. It says, hold on, because when they hit that beach, the boat slams in and everybody goes flying over. So they usually, what they do, they get the coxswain, they're about to reverse the engines, so that it slows the boat down, so when it hits the beach, you don't pound, so where guys go flying. So anyway, we get off, and 90% of you always wind up in the water up to your ankle, your chest. And we get on that beach, and you won't believe this, women and children. I was in the invasion of Leyte, the Philippines. So we were the first guys come back, and when we hit that bed, women running, jumping on you, kissing you, hugging you. I had two kids hanging off my shoulder, and this lady's holding me and kissing me. Americano, God, she's kissing. And the guys, get off the beach, get off the beach. You can't move with all this. So anyway, we finally get it ashore. And then it wasn't so easy, but then, like I tell people, I said, you have no idea what it's like when you're soaking wet like that. Now you tell me, when they reverse those engines, what they bring all that sand up, and it gets in. Now you might go a day, 2 days, maybe 3 days without being able to change clothes. 98 degrees, the sun bearing down, soaking dry, and all that, like it's just pure salt. And then it gets into your crotch and your shoes and your feet. And you're walking in the sand, just rubbing your raw. and you can't change. The guys finally get to take your shoes off. They take your shoes off, and the socks are full of blood. So the sand gets in between your toes, and so you imagine what it must be. And now you go to the bathrooms. You're in a combat area. There's no toilets and nothing. So we went, I think it was about a day and a half. We're up in the lines. We finally get relieved and go back. And the guy says, just you guys crap out, take it easy. So he says, you dig a hole and you get into this foxhole. I mean, I was exhausted. I just passed out. All of a sudden, I wake up. I go up, move, and I'm soaked water in the foxhole up to my chest. I'm sitting there. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning. And the night before, a couple of guys had got shot, wandering around. And then I says, I can't. I'm holding the rifle up, but I'm not by this time. You're freezing. The water is make you cold. So I'm saying, what the hell? I'm going to get out of this hole. So I finally started hollering, hey, it's me, Brody. It's me, Brody. And then I started walking down. And I got into one of the gun pits they got. So the guy says, get on the tarp over there, get on top of it. So I got on top of the tarp and I just passed out. Didn't sleep enough, so dead tired.
What I'm hearing is all the stuff besides combat that was hazardous to your health, that was challenging, that was difficult. What about combat itself? Because here you are, a teenager. I'm sure your mother was worried sick back home in Brooklyn and praying her tail off.
We told a story one time to the family about the grenade. They come to me, and the sergeant says, Boria, he said, I want you to report to the first sergeant. So I pick up my rifle and pick, I go over to the first sergeant. And he says, look, you're the youngest guy we got here. We figured that guy, you can really run. We're going to put you out in the outpost. So about 1 o'clock, they send a guy that wakes me up and says, so I get him, and he takes me out. This is a combat. I'm in front lines. It's all jungle. So anyway, they take me out, and they said, okay. The guy tells me, you got a grenade? I says, yeah. He said, give me. So I give him the grenade. He takes the grenade, pulls the pin. He says, open your hand. And he puts the pin in my hand. And I got this grenade. And I'm sitting there, nothing did. Nobody, it was just pitch black. And you sit there with this grenade. He says, if you hear anything, throw down a grenade and get back here. So I'm holding the grenade. The guy takes off, and all of a sudden, now I'm shaking. One of the worst things ever is to have to do poo-poo in your pants. I mean, that's, nobody's going to say you make, because everybody goes through this. So, they know what it's like. But it's just a shame that you pooped your pants. You've heard that saying how many times? Oh, you took that scared. And it's so true. It is. I mean, you got to be. So I'm sitting there and I'm starting to shake and I'm saying, oh, God, I'm really scared. I mean, and you're holding this thing, grenade, you're going to get. So I'm saying to myself, if I keep like that, this thing is going to go off. They have a bird. I don't know what the name of that bird is, but it screeches. At the night, when that bird let that screech out, I thought I had busted through my. I was rolled over, and I'm squeezing that grenade so hard, I thought I was going to crush it. And I mean, I'm talking about shaking, and I'm rolling over, and now thinking of my mama, I wanted to get the hell out of here. But anyway, I started to pray. And the next thing you know, I was just calmed down. I mean, just like I'm sitting here, just like this, with that grenade in my hand, and just sat there like that, and I'm saying to myself, thank you, go ahead. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And then the next thing you know, this guy's coming. Boria, of course. I said, come on, come on, come on. He says, you got the grenade? He says, yeah, get it. He takes the grenade. He said, get down. And he throws the grenade. I just stood there staring at him. He said, you did what you're supposed to do now. Come on, get back here. I couldn't believe it. I said, that bastard had all this time. And he comes and takes it and he throws it. And like if nothing. So I got back hanging around. And so one of the guys says, hey, I hear you've been a big hero. I said, what the hell are you talking about, big hero? I ain't no big hero. He said, yeah, the sergeant's talking about how you kept a grenade. You didn't throw the grenade that you got back. And such and that. He says, everybody's saying, you're crazy. He said, I would have thrown that grenade and run and get back here. Who the hell would have known the difference? I said, that? I said, that was my manhood. That was my man. To me, that was the greatest thing I ever did in the Marine Corps. Go down that way, what I mean? There were many other times that I was scared, but this time it was special. It was that I overcome that, and so it was great feeling.
It's time for our final break, but when we come back, more of Lou's World War II memories, as well as experiences from the Korean War, and how he ended up on the front page of a major newspaper. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I've found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.